Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter 7. We'll begin reading at verse 1, read through verse 6, and we'll come back and make some remarks and pick up at about verse 4, where we ended last Wednesday evening in this context, just at the occasion in which Paul begins to make application of the argument that he has made. Romans chapter 7, reading from the New King James Version, verse 1. Or do you not know, brethren, for I speak to those who know the law, that the law has dominion over a man as long as he lives? For the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. But if the husband dies, she is released from the law of her husband. So then, if while her husband lives, she marries another man, she will be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she has married another man. Therefore, my brethren, you also have become dead to the law through the body of Christ, that you might be married to another, to him who was raised from the dead, that we should bear fruit to God. For when we were in the flesh, the sinful passions which were aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit to death. But now we have been delivered from the law, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of the Spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. The context of this actually goes back into chapter 6. Back in chapter 6, Paul had used an illustration of slavery. After speaking about them having died to sin in baptism, he uses the illustration of slavery, that they had been set free from sin and had become slaves of righteousness. In this chapter, he uses an illustration of marriage to illustrate the point that they have been separated, loosed from the law of Moses. He mentioned the law back in chapter 6 and in verse 14, and this is why he deals with the subject. Chapter 6 and verse 14, for sin shall not have dominion or rule over you, for you're not under law, but under grace. We're not under law, but under grace. Remember, God's plan or system by which he justifies or saves man is by grace through faith. And so we're not under a system of law. And so having brought that up, he mentions in chapter 6 and verse 15, what then? Shall we sin because we're not under law but under grace? Certainly not. So he begins to deal with the fact that we're not under law. As a matter of fact, in chapter 7, he seems to be speaking directly to the Jews who thought perhaps they were still under the law of Moses, that is, subject to the law of Moses. So he uses marriage to illustrate the point that they have died to the law of Moses. In chapter 7 in verse 1, we're not going to spend a lot of time on the first three verses of this. We spoke quite a length about it last Wednesday evening, but we kind of got off the subject and wanted to discuss marriage some, but marriage is not the subject under consideration. It's the fact that they've been freed from the law. The law, of course, is the law of Moses. And they had been freed from that law. I had mentioned at the beginning of this chapter that law is used in four different ways here. First, we have law, general, that is mentioned in verse 1. Then we have the law of the marriage law in verse 2, as well as the law or rule of her husband in verse 2. And then application to that in verse 4 to the law of Moses. And so we'll not spend time looking at the argument that Paul makes, but remember we went over to Colossians chapter 2, verse 13 and 14, and showed that when Christ died on the cross, he nailed the old law to the cross. To nail something to a cross is to put it to death. So the old law was put to death when Christ was put to death on the cross. And so in verse 4, he makes application to his argument. Remember There is a woman in the argument who is married, but her husband has died. That husband represents the old law. The husband has died. And so the woman can be married to another, because at the death of her husband, she is loosed from the law or rule of her husband. And so she has a right to remarry. And so Paul makes application here in verse 4 when he says, therefore or wherefore. So he draws a conclusion off of the argument that he made in the first three verses. Therefore, my brethren, you also have become dead to the law, note this, through the body of Christ. I suggested to you it is through the crucified body of Christ. Again, Colossians 2 and verse 14. Christ, when he was crucified, nailed the old law to the cross. So it was through the death of Christ on the cross that the old law was put to death. The old law being put to death at the death of Christ is similar to the husband dying. And the wife then, being freed from the law or rule of her husband, is able to remarry. And so in verse 4, therefore, my brethren, you also have become dead to the law through the body of Christ, that in order that or so that you might be married to another. So the Jew is like the woman who's been freed from the law or rule or authority of her husband, and now she has the right to remarry because her husband is dead. And so the Jew has a right to marry, be, you might say, ruled by another, by Christ. That's the one under consideration, that you might be married to another, to him who was raised from the dead. And that actually goes back to chapter 6. Chapter 6. And in verse 4, therefore we were buried with him through baptism into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead. These two chapters kind of fit together. There's several things said in chapter 6 that's also mentioned in chapter 7. But different subjects are under consideration. So, they have become dead to the law, so that they can be married to Christ. And note this, that we should bear fruit to God. Bring forth fruit to God. Now, where was fruit mentioned before? Well, it was mentioned back in chapter 6. Back in chapter 6, remember, they had their fruit under righteousness now, since they're children of God. But before that, they had fruit that brought about spiritual death. Remember, fruit is result. It's something they produce in their life. We'll not take time to go back into chapter 6, but if you've been with us, you're familiar with what I'm speaking about. Therefore, we should bear fruit to God. Bear fruit, produce fruit. That might come to your mind, Galatians 5 and in verse 22, the fruit of the Spirit. What kind of fruit do we bear to God? Fruits of righteousness. Now that we're married to Christ and no longer under the old law. Of course he has, not the Gentile in man, but the Jew who thought that though he had obeyed the gospel, he could still hold to the works of the law of Moses as a means of justification or salvation. And so Paul has spent a great length of time trying to get them to understand that they're not under a system of law for justification or salvation. Once they violate law, they stand condemned before God. Thus, they must be under some other system, that is a system of grace through faith.
James, a person cannot be married to the Old Testament and married to the New Testament, because if you claim that, you're committing spiritual adultery.
Spiritual adultery. Very good, and that we brought that out last Wednesday evening too, and there's so many people today who commit spiritual adultery. Those who believe in the use of instruments of music in worship, where do they go to justify that? To the Old Testament scriptures. So they seek to be married to the old law and married to Christ at the same time. They're committing spiritual adultery. And we could think of many other examples to illustrate that as well. But that's a good point. Verse 5, Romans 7. For when we were in the flesh, the sinful passions which were aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit to death. But now we have been delivered from the law, loosed from the law, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of the Spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. So verse 5, for when we were in the flesh. Now, when we were in the flesh, Paul, of course, uses a pronoun here, when we, and later on he's going to use the pronoun I. He simply puts himself in a position. It's a rhetorical device of which all men are in the same condition in regard to law. When he says, for when we were in the flesh, well, are they not in the flesh, physically in the flesh? Now, if you're familiar with the New International Version, the word flesh here, they translate sinful nature in this context about three times. Sinful nature, which is a very bad translation. I want to help you figure out what's under consideration here. Note the second word of the verse. For when we were, that is in times past, in the flesh. We know that in the flesh here doesn't mean physically in the flesh or in the body. That would not make sense. When we were in the flesh. So when were these individuals in the flesh? When they were living under Old Testament law, or when they succumbed to the desires, temptation, inclinations of the flesh. Remember, back in chapter 6, begin at verse 12. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body, that you should obey it in its lust. And do not present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves to God as being alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness to God. And then he mentions this again later on in verse 19. I speak in human terms because of the weakness of your flesh, for just as you presented your members as slaves of uncleanness and of lawlessness leading to more lawlessness, so now present your members as slaves of righteousness for holiness. So the very same thing is under consideration here for when we were in the flesh. When were they in the flesh? When they succumbed, when they gave themselves up to desires and inclinations of the flesh. That's when they were in the flesh, when they were serving sin. That's what's under consideration. That's the when. They're not in the flesh now. Now, they're physically in flesh and body, but that's not the point that is being made. The point that is being made is they're not in the flesh in the sense that they're succumbing, giving themselves up to desires and inclinations of the flesh. They're not using the members of their body as instruments of uncleanness, instruments of lawlessness, but they're using now the members of their body as instruments or tools of righteousness for God. So note verse 5 again, Romans 7, for when we were in the flesh, the sinful passions, motions of sin, the King James Version says, the sinful passions which were aroused by the law, the sinful passions. Why is it referred to sinful? Passions are the emotions that one has, the feelings that one has, the inclinations of the flesh. And why are they referred to as sinful passions or inclinations of the flesh? Because it leads to sin. When we were in the flesh, the sinful passions, when we were in the flesh, the sinful passions, the emotions, the feelings, the inclinations of the flesh, the desires, cravings, and longings of the flesh that brought about sin in our life, note this, which were aroused by the law, were at work in our members. What was at work in our members? The sinful passions, the inclinations, desires, and cravings of the flesh were at work in our members, the members of our body. Note this, to bear fruit to death. Verse 4, that we should bear fruit to God. But when we were in the flesh, what was the result of being in the flesh? Giving ourselves up to the desires and inclinations of the flesh. The result of that, the fruit of that, that was produced, was spiritual death. Again, that was spoken about back in chapter 6. But how is it, he says in verse 5, when he says, "For when we were in the flesh, the sinful passions which were aroused by the law." Now, how did the law arouse the desires and inclinations of the flesh? How did the law do that?
Because it told what to do and what not to do.
Yes, because the law told you that you could not covet. We'll see that example later on. Yes. Well, he was referring back to every man. Every man, when he is in the flesh, he gives himself up to desires and inclinations of the flesh. And he sins. Why does he sin, though? He sins because he gives in to the desires and inclinations of the flesh. But how does he know he sins? He knows he sins because of the law. Because he violates law. There is no sin without law. Law identifies what sin is. If there was no law at all, then there would be no sin. Again, 1 John 3 and verse 4, sin is a transgression of law. So it was the law of Moses that did not make people sin, but it made them aware of their sin when they sinned. And he says, we're at work in our members to bear fruit, produce a result to death, to spiritual death. Verse 6, Romans 7. But now, so in verse 5 we had the word when we were in the flesh. Note the word now. So now that they're Christians, now that they've died to sin, now that sin no longer rules and reigns over them, now we have been delivered from the law, freed from the law, released from the law. Goes back in the context here. Verse 2, for the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. But if a husband dies, she is released, freed, loosed from the law of her husband. So, but now, we have been released and loosed from the law. But now we've been delivered from the law. I take the law into consideration to be the law of Moses. Having died to what we were held by. Having died. So we have died to what we were held by. What were we held by before? We were held by the law. We were under law. We were subject to the law of Moses, to the Jew.
It's a good thing we're not under that law, man, because that law demanded perfection. We're under the law of Christ, which demands perfection.
Okay. Good point. So now we've been delivered, released, or loosed from the law, having died to what we were held by. So that, in order that we should serve in newness of spirit and not in the oldness of letter. Serve in newness of spirit, not the spirit. The definite article is not in the Greek. And not in the oldness of the letter. Now, where do you suppose that phrase, newness of spirit, where do you suppose it goes back to in the context? Because we've seen when we were in the flesh and now we've been loosed or freed or released from the law. So, so that we should serve in newness of spirit. Where does that go back in the context? Anybody?
Chapter 6.
Note this in verse 4. Therefore, we were buried with him through baptism into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. So now, since we've been delivered or loosed from the law, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in newness of spirit. Newness of spirit. Our spirit has been cleansed. Our spirit has been regenerated. We've been set free from sin, and we've been delivered and loosed from the law of Moses. Now we can serve in newness of spirit. Regenerated. A new child in Christ Jesus. And not in the oldness of the letter. The letter has reference to the law of Moses. The letter simply speaks of that which is written. So now we serve in newness of spirit. We've been regenerated in spirit. We can serve with a new spirit, new attitude, new disposition, because we're no longer slaves of sin, but slaves of God, and not in the oldness of the letter. Remember, we were in bondage to sin under the old law. There was no forgiveness under the old law. And so we do not serve in the oldness of the letter, that is the old law, but in newness of spirit. Chapter 7 in verse 7. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? Certainly not. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law. For I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. But sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, produced in me all manner of evil desire. For apart from the law, sin was dead. I was alive once without the law, but when the commandment came, sin revived and I died. And the commandment which was to bring life, I found to bring death. For sin, taking occasion by the commandment, deceived me and by it killed me. Therefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy and just and good. So he speaks about sin here, and you note in this context he used the singular pronoun I, putting himself in a position in which all men are in regard to law. So he says, what shall we say then? Is the law sin? One might think, well, since what he mentioned in verse 5, for when we were in the flesh, the sinful passions which were aroused by the law were at work in our members. Well, if the sinful passions were aroused by the law, then that means law must be sinful, because it makes us sinners. No, law doesn't make us sinners. Law identifies what sin is. Our violation of law makes us sinners, but the law itself does not make us sinners. Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden were under the law of God. As long as they kept the law of God, it did not make them sinners. Did not make them sinners at all. But once they violated law, they stood guilty of sin. So what shall we say then? Is the law sin? Is it sinful? Certainly not. Meaning, God forbid. Let it never be said. Let us never say that about law. The law under consideration, of course, is the law of Moses, but it would be true of any law that man has lived under. On the contrary, he says, I, note the singular pronoun, I would not have known sin. And again, Paul just uses the plural pronoun here, or the singular pronoun referring to himself, as a rhetorical device. He puts himself in the position of every man under law. He said, I would not have known sin, that is, I wouldn't know what sin is, except through the law. Sin identifies, or the law identifies what sin is. For I would not have known covetousness, except or unless the law had said, you shall not covet. Exodus 20 and verse 17. Remember the old law, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's oxen, and so forth. So we wouldn't know what covetous was and that it was a sin unless law identified it as such. For I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. That's how we know what sin is, when we violate law. Verse 8, Romans 7. But sin, note this, taking occasion, taking opportunity by the commandment, produced in me all manner of evil desire. Now look at this very closely. But sin, taking opportunity by the commandment. What is the commandment? It's the law. But sin, taking opportunity by the law. The commandment here has reference to a single commandment or all the commandments contained in the law. He had just mentioned one commandment contained in the law in verse 7, you shall not covet. So sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, note this, worked in me or produced in me or resulted in me all manner of evil desire or concupiscence. The King James Version says, evil desire. Now, it's just the word desire here. The word concupiscence is the same word translated in Romans lust, translated desire, translated covet. What does it mean to covet? To long, to desire, to crave for that which God forbids you to have. You're not to covet your neighbor's wife. God forbids you to have your neighbor's wife. Thus, to covet is to long, desire, or crave that which God forbids you to have. So sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, produced in me, worked in me, all manner of evil desire. Now, sin did that. Sin did that, not the law. The law didn't do it. Sin did it. Sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, produced in me all matter of evil desire. Sin did. The law didn't do it. Sin did it. The evil desire, you note the word evil in the New King James Version in italics been added because the desire under consideration is evil desire. It's a desire for that which God forbids you to have. So thus it's rendered all manner of evil desire. Then he says, for apart, or separate from, or independent from the law, sin was dead. Sin was dead. Sin was dead. If sin is dead, it's inoperative. It has no power, it has no force, it has no influence. What he says here, for apart or independent from the law, sin was dead. You might say it didn't exist because there is no sin without law. Now, he had mentioned this before. Turn back over to chapter 5. Chapter 5. Chapter 5, verse 13. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed where there is no law. Sin is not imputed where there is no law. There's no such thing as sin if there is no law. So apart from, separate from, independent of, and that's what that word apart means, from the law, sin was dead. You might say it had no influence. It had no power. It had no effect upon one. Verse 9, Romans 7. Paul said, I was alive once without the law. I was alive. Is he talking about physical life? I was alive once without the law. I was alive spiritually without the law. That's the idea. Was Adam and Eve alive spiritually without the law? They had law. They were living in harmony with it. But then they violated it and they died spiritually. So Paul says, I was alive once without the law. That's right, he was alive once, like all men have been alive spiritually without the law.
Does that mean before he became a
captain? No, he uses himself here as, because when you're not accountable, you don't understand law. But when you become of accountable age, you understand what sin is. All men, if they do not have law, we're talking about law that governs rules, governs one's spiritual life. He's alive. He's alive spiritually. But once he violates that law, he's dead spiritually. And so Paul puts himself in a position of all men. I was alive once without the law. But when the commandment came, the commandment is simply the law. When the commandment came, we might say in the context, when the commandment of thou shalt not covet came. Well, I violated that command. I'm no longer alive. I'm dead. That's what he's saying. I was alive once without the law, but when the commandment came, note this, sin revived. Sin sprang alive. Sin came back to life, and I died. I died spiritually. Note again in verse 8, for apart or separate from the law, sin was dead. Sin was dead. But here, sin is revived. It's like a person. He's personifying sin here. So apart or independent from the law, sin was dead. If there is no law, sin is dead. It's not operative. It's not powerful. It has no influence. But when law comes and you violate the law, then sin springs alive. Sin comes back alive. It springs to life and brings death, spiritual death. So he says, when the commandment came, sin revived. That is, it sprang to life. It came back alive, and I died. He died spiritually. And the commandment, verse 10, Romans 7, and the commandment which was to bring life, I found to bring death. The commandment which was to bring life, I found to bring death. The commandment was the law, the old law to the Jew. The old law to the Jew thought he had life. He thought he had life, spiritual life, through the keeping of the commandments of the law of Moses. But what did he not do? He did not keep the law perfectly. Thus he stood condemned in the sight of God. So verse 10, and the commandment which was to bring life, spiritual life, I found to bring death, spiritual death. So the old law did not bring spiritual life. What did it bring? It brought spiritual death. Because once one violated it, he stood condemned in the sight of God. He was a sinner in need of justification or salvation. Now, how could he be forgiven? By grace through faith. That's how. Verse 12, or verse 11, Romans 7. For sin, taking occasion by the commandment, note this, deceived me. And by it killed me or slew me. It made me dead. It put me to spiritual death. For sin, taking occasion by the commandment, that is, by the law, deceived me. What deceived him? The law didn't deceive him, but sin deceived him. Sin beguiled him. Sin seduced him. Just like sin seduced, beguiled, and deceived Eve in the garden. It wasn't the law. It wasn't the law. The law was good. As he says in the very next verse, therefore the law is holy. It's pure. It's sacred. And the commandment, holy and just, upright and good, honorable, noble. There's nothing wrong with the law. What was wrong was people did not keep it. Through the inclinations, desires, cravings, and longings of the flesh, they violated it. Because it came from God, exactly. Right. Yeah, there was nothing wrong with the law. It was the people did not keep the law. If we could say that there was something wrong with the law, the only thing that could be said about the law that would be wrong with it is it provided no means by which man could be justified. But I think if we go back and consider the context, even the book of Romans, we'd say, well, remember, Abraham was justified. He was justified by grace through faith. So even in the law, justification was possible, but it wasn't possible by the keeping of the law. Right. And That's why it's said here in verse 7, what shall we say then? Is the law sin? Certainly not. God forbid. Let us never say that, because the law came from God. The law did not bring something into existence that was sinful. He just didn't do it. All right, we're out of time. Questions or comments? Any other remarks? We'll pick up. We didn't get very far. I hope my explanation of this has helped you some. It's difficult to follow Paul's arguments and difficult to explain his arguments, but I hope you see the point. They're not under law. They're not under law as a means of justification. They're under grace through faith. All right, we'll pick up Romans 7 and verse 13 next Wednesday evening. Thank you very much for your kind attention.